Nope, Bobby Moore. No knighthood. I didn't think so because the establishment don't like him, man.
Like him, yeah. You're not an FA man.
What an amazing comeback! You just cannot write scripts like this.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Final Countdown, a podcast looking back at great finals within the game of football. I am Lewis, here with my co-host Adam.
Hello there. So
apologies for the small break. Myself and Adam have been off sunning ourselves in hotter climates. Mm. Although saying that, we're currently sweltering in my living room.
It's a hot climate in here.
It is. Not just because of the hosts. You like that?
It's good.
Yeah. Self-praise is no praise. That was once what I was told.
I need to interrupt you, mate, because I have a guilt complex. It's Lewis's birthday. Happy birthday, Lewis.
Thanks, mate.
I've been here for 25 minutes and I forgot to say it. But it is like stealth birthday. There's no cards up.
No, we don't celebrate in my family, as you very well know. You know,
here we go.
Wait, that makes me sound like a Jehovah's Witness. Nothing against them, but I'm just not one. So while we've diverted away from what we're actually here to do, we are going to do a recap, because better late than never, of the two European finals that involved English clubs.
So
we've got West Ham Fiorentina in the Europa Conference League. Europa League was Sevilla, of course.
Yep.
Just winning it because that's what they do.
Yep.
No matter who's in charge or who's on the team, Sevilla winning
it's just
it.
Their cup, yeah.
Are they the opposite of Benfica? Whereas Benfica are cursed to never win a European trophy. Sevilla cursed. Only ever. They'll only ever win the Europa League. And obviously we're talking about Man City, treble winners, who managed to defeat a rather plucky Inter Milan team. But we'll get to that. So we're going to start, first of all, with the West Ham final. Addy, what were your thoughts on the final as a spectacle?
Well, we have a good friend of ours who's a West Ham fan, or at least he claims to be.
Yeah, sure, with an asterisk.
Yeah, so it was quite exciting, actually, because I think we were all pulling for West Ham to win.
Yeah.
I think they are one of those teams that's a bit of a neutrally loved team.
I agree with that about the team. I think because they've got history as well and they've got kind of pedigree in there.
Yeah.
They're tied in with
they're
the 66
World Cup winning team. They're not particularly offensive as a team.
No.
I think 66, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
The only thing I know that a lot of fans, travelling away fans of West Ham sometimes get a bit of a bad reputation. But the team as a whole, I don't think. Yeah, I agree. Most people. I
mean, you're probably right. I'm sure they're not particularly popular with other London supporters.
Yeah.
But I think from the setback perspective that we have.
The history. Trevor Brooking. That's what we're talking
Trevor
about.
Trevor Brooking.
Trevor Sinclair. All the Trevors. The great Trevors, past and present.
Yeah, and I think, so I think there was a general, probably more than the Man City game, there was a general element of, we want West Ham to win this across England. So, yeah, that was kind of how I viewed it. And, I mean, I'm sure we'll get there, but what a finish. Like, what an English way to win a final.
Yeah.
Just full of drama and tension. And
not doing it the easy way.
No, exactly, yeah. If there's a way to do it, that's the English way.
West Ham, as I'm sure everybody knows, managed to win 2-1 in the 93rd minute from Jared Bowen, incisive breakaway. So we'll talk about the game a little bit, but there were obviously a few flashpoints during the game. There was the initial deadlock breaker, the penalty for the handball by Baragi, who, for being the captain, had pretty torrid match. So he gives away the penalty, and he's also the guy who plays Bowen onside in the 93rd
minute. Oh, is he? I didn't know that. Right.
But also, while we're talking about Baragi, we have to talk a little bit about the fan action of West Ham throwing the cups onto the pitch at the corner.
Yeah.
Obviously hitting Baragi, who then had to be kind of...
There have been a lot of stuff in the build-up, haven't there?
There had,
like the Fiorentina ultras going for West Ham fans.
That's right.
I'm not saying retaliation is good, but... It's not like it came out of nowhere.
No. And again, for those that might have missed, the initial part was before the game, 14 to 16 Fiorentina fans walked past a cafe, scouted that there were West Ham fans
15.
There. Well, 14 to 16. If only there was a number that would best describe what I'm talking about.
So brilliantly specific.
I don't know why I decided to do that, but yeah, you're right. Probably about 15, approximately 15. fans managed to scout out a cafe where there was a bunch of West Ham fans. They came back moments later with weapons and attacked them.
Yeah, it's a bit nasty.
Yeah, really nasty. Yeah. And so obviously there was that kind of sense of bad blood, which is a shame because both teams had done incredibly well to get there. I always find it a little bit mixed because I actually thought on the day they were pretty even, the two teams. And on paper, necessarily, I think they're even. But there's just always that spectre. And I guess, well, maybe we'll touch on it. Maybe we'll ignore it because it's probably a bit boring now. But the same thing about Man City, where like West Ham's finances are seven times the amount of Fiorentina's. So it's always a little bit like, West Ham feel like plucky underdogs for us in a Premier League context, but globally they are still probably in the top 50 biggest clubs in the world.
It's also a funny narrative, isn't it, that has come through that if you have money, you automatically have success, which is just proven again and again and again not to be true.
No, but I do think it... I agree with you in terms of... we're kind of moving backwards and forwards between the two teams, but with Man City, I don't believe that anyone other than Pep would get Man City playing like this and winning the trophies they have.
Different. Like so money didn't... I guess you could argue money got Pep, but it's just like, you know, you think of Chelsea this season, yeah. Everton, like, mm-hmm. you know, Newcastle starting to go now, sure. but money doesn't, it doesn't automatically give you success. It no. gives you a shot.
Yeah, exactly. And it does give you a foot up against lesser teams. You can flat track bully, like the idea that Bournemouth can buy a player that Juventus can't because yeah. they're just in the Premier League and they have TV money that...
But there are, I think, Man City aside, there are ways for teams with less financial power to compete.
Yeah, absolutely true.
Brighton being an obvious
Brentford,
one.
Yeah, Brentford, people like that.
Even Villa, like, yeah. you know, they haven't spent big and yet they've smashed Chelsea in a yeah. big way, like other teams that you just haven't competed this year that have got way more money. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes the Man City argument is a little bit misleading because of the Pep factor.
Yeah.
Because that isn't the same.
And ultimately we'll see, let's say in 2 years' time, we'll really see
yeah.
what the fruits of this are. Because yeah, there isn't another manager necessarily at the moment you look at going, oh, if Pep leaves, they're the natural successor, they're the second best manager in the world or yeah. whoever. So it really will be kind of interesting to see the drop-off. Will it be like a Sir Alex Ferguson thing
yeah,
where
right,
once
yeah.
Pep goes, is it going to be a succession of three or four managers trying to get their groove back? So it'll be really interesting to watch.
Jack Grealish will take control.
Oh, Jackie Grealish. Give that boy a nighter, to tell you that much right now. Sir Jack Grealish, arise. I tell you what, I'm looking forward to see what absolute state he's going to be in tomorrow night for the England game.
Have you seen the photo of the Man City players lined up at England duty?
No, I haven't
it's
seen
like
that.
England, like, you know, some people thought these guys wouldn't get here. And here they are looking fresh as a daisy and it scans across the Grealish and he just looks like he isn't there. It's like, yeah, Grealish doesn't look all right.
Credit, I didn't make a note of the username, but credit to one Twitter user that put out a tweet effectively saying, I'd love to see a Hangover sequel with John Stones, Kyle Walker, trying to get Jack Grealish to the England camp, which
good.
I loved.
That is
something I would pay to see.
Yeah, definitely.
So back to the West Ham game. Fiorentina did really well. It was quite an even game, although you could argue that they didn't really create a load of clear-cut opportunities. They hit the post from a Kwame header early on in the first half.
Yep.
And they took their goal really well. But other than that, despite...
Well, they're the disallowed goal.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
Broken nose boy.
That's right, yeah. Jovic, who, unfortunately kicked in the nose. Although afterwards, so I know we're all over the place with this review, but it's just very much riffing. Mm. But Vincenzo Italiano, which is a great name for an Italian manager,
it is,
by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Mr. Vincent Italy, in charge of Fiorentina. Him and I think the owner of Fiorentina came out afterwards saying that West Ham were animals and obviously leaning on the yeah. cups being thrown onto the pitch. And whilst it was like a robust game, I didn't think it was filthy or dirty. But and also like Jovic getting his nose broken, he's diving for a header and the guy's trying to flick away. There's no intent
game,
on
yeah.
that. It's not a high foot. It's
they're quite bad losers, aren't they, Italians?
Yeah, well, what's it, Jan Cruyff said? Italian teams can't beat you, but you can lose to them.
Yeah.
And it's very much that like war of attrition. I know it's a lot of stereotypes and it's not like Fiorentina stuck 10 men behind the ball and played like Catenaccio. They gave as good as they got, but there is that sense of like, there's always an injustice.
It's that's what I mean. It's just a bit, it's almost like, what are they going to say then? What didn't go for them?
I mean, you didn't qualify for two out of the last three major tournaments. I know you won one of them, but nevertheless, it is a little bit like...
We're holding that against them.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think overall West Ham, and maybe it's an English bias, but I think West Ham deserve to win because they took their chances.
You didn't come to the end of the game and thought, oh God, they got away with that.
No.
Just felt like a really close game settled by you shinned it, but a brilliant finish.
Yeah. It's the composure, isn't it? Because not only is it a fine through ball from Lucas Paquetá, the through ball is perfectly weighted so Bowen doesn't have to break stride. But Bowen's got three Italian defenders, Fiorentina defenders, sorry, chasing after him, breathing down his neck. He's one-on-one in the biggest game of his entire career.
And that's got to flash through his mind.
Absolutely. It's almost, he's got so long to run with the ball that you know all of that is going through his mind.
Yeah.
But it was a great moment when it went in. And I think West Ham deserved it.
Yeah, I agree.
Game for one of these teams to try and find a winner. Paquetá looking to release Bowen. Flag stays down. Bowen's through. One-on-one hits the shot. Stays down, and the West Ham fans go absolutely berserk. They're a plastic
like I said, it was a lovely moment. It was a lovely moment that Bowen scored, because I rate Bowen. I think he's a good player. So for them to, I mean, was that first silverware in 60 something years or something?
First European silverware in 60 odd years. Of course, his first major trophy in 43.
Well, they won
the
FA Cup, didn't they?
That's right.
Sir Trevor Brooking. Yeah, so it was brilliant. I think it's brilliant from a neutral point of view. Obviously, it's brilliant for West Ham. Some of the celebrations and stuff you've seen since. And I think that's a really good, I don't often praise social media. I think it's a cesspit. But I think one thing that social media is brilliant at is being able to access the sense of enjoyment and celebration that goes on after these big things now. Yeah. And that you know, if you spent, you know, half an hour on Twitter the day after, it was great seeing all the fans. And one interview with as a kid, wasn't there? Did you see that one? The kid outside, like, celebrating, like, crying because West Ham had won.
Awesome.
But he still had time to mug off Spurs. He's literally, so like, crying. He's like, we've won more trophies than Spurs.
It's all about keeping perspective. Even in that. That's so good.
It was good.
But that's really good. But you are right. Like, I know occasionally on this podcast, because obviously most of the time we're talking about the elite teams because of the nature of the podcast, talking about great European finals, World Cup finals, etc. We've occasionally been a bit snobby about, you know, the Conference League. But this is why it's so good, because teams that would never have a shot at the Europa League or the Champions League get to have their moment in the sun, get to have this outpouring of celebration. I do actually think that the Conference League in general has been a big success for these smaller teams.
I think also as well, it's changed, probably West Ham winning, I think it's going to change the way that's perceived.
Yeah, by how seriously people take it.
Because, you know, like you were saying, like, Brighton can't compete on a continental scale. They can't in the Champions League. Fair play to them to getting to where they got to, but they do amazingly to get somewhere in the Europa League. The Europa League, aren't they, next year? I think they are. Because Villa are in the conference.
Yeah.
But I think David Moyes, which we should talk about in a minute anyway, I think he saved his job.
Yeah.
By going after a cup that probably people would have been like, don't worry about that. Yeah, it's a piece of shit.
Yeah, especially when, like, before they got through to the semi-finals, West Ham were still looking shaky in the league.
Yeah.
And that would be everything from the shareholders' point of view.
Hugely, mate. Yeah. And I think if you remove the Conference League, say they get knocked out in January, I don't think he survives.
No, I completely agree with that. It's almost like, right, because Moyes has got us this far and we're doing okay, we'll stick with him and see where it goes.
Yeah.
I think even if they had lost, I think they would have mutually kind of walked away and gone, thanks very much, great memory.
Well, he said it, didn't he? He said in the week before the final, if I lose, I think I'm done. I don't know if it was him, but someone said Moyes will be done. Obviously I'm an Everton fan, so I've got a lot of affection for David Moyes, but there were some lovely moments with him.
Yeah.
In particular with his dad.
Oh, heartwarming.
Oh, mate.
So heartwarming.
Because Moyes is usually so hard-nosed.
Yeah, very dour.
Yeah. So you have a few moments where you're like, oh, actually, he's human. A couple of moments in his press conference and stuff where he, like, a reporter called him Moisey.
Is that right?
Earlier this season, and he kind of like mocked them.
Moisey, how old are you catching that?
Moisey? Yeah, okay, I don't think we're that close. Anyway, no, we didn't play well.
That's good.
It made its way to BBC Sports, so I saw it. But usually it's pretty dry, media trained football manager, but that was lovely. Those of you who didn't see it, his 87-year-old dad was at the game, and David Moyes took his winner's medal over and put it on his dad and posted photos and stuff. Yeah, it was right.
That's why we love the sport, and that's why kind of success matters in terms of giving fans their moment, their outpouring okay, like you say, 40 odd years between the trophy. So there will be obviously kids that have never seen West Ham have any form of success. But there's also people that would have been like 15 last time they saw it, and now they get to watch it with their own kids.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it makes the Premier League more interesting in the sense that I think if you're in 10th, you're going to feel like you're still playing for something. The end of the season, like, you know, maybe we can get to 7th and nick a place.
Yeah.
And then go into a tournament that we're probably all right matched.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And that's the thing is, West Ham, Fiorentina were probably the best team that they came up against. Mm-hmm. So it's a well-balanced competition in the sense you're not up against Inter Milan and yeah, Real Madrid yeah. and all the rest of it, which they just get smashed.
Well, it's like Leicester. Leicester, obviously, after winning the league, got into the Champions League exactly, and then faced like Atletico Madrid, which they did all right, but like ultimately Leicester didn't do anything in that competition because it was a step too far for them.
Yeah, and I think that's the difference, isn't it, is with the, you know, the Liverpools and the Uniteds and the Cities, obviously, you know, those teams have got the squads mm-hmm. to be competing in the Premier League and then go away midweek and be in Europe,
yeah.
the top elite yeah. Europe. Whereas you can't expect that from Brighton and Brentford and Spurs.
I love the fact we'll still take the opportunity to give Spurs a dig as well as that young West Ham. Well,
it's lovely for Spurs. They'll be able to play for seventh and be able to play for
Harry Kane's got his eyes set on the Conference League. Now, poor Harry Kane. We obviously spoke about
him
a couple of weeks ago about, you know, he should go to United. It makes sense. All this kind of stuff. But now it looks like United don't want him. Mbappe's getting released or is now available for transfer from PSG. So it looks like Real Madrid will finally get him. So it's kind of like Harry Kane's kind of got nobody to go to.
Well,
I really feel
Daniel
for
Levy
him.
Won't sell him to United.
To a rival.
But I can see, because I've also read this week that Mbappe is being lined up for United.
I'll believe it when I see it. I just don't see there being enough trust in United yet. It's not that they're not a big club.
I don't know Mbappe's character at all, but I wonder if he fancies being the big dog rather than going and sharing. Because like, if you go to Madrid, it's a club full of...
However, their big icons have left now. It's a very young team. Like, really, Vinicius Jr. is probably their best player now that Benzema's gone. So, really, it's Mbappe.
I think you're fine. Bellingham's gone there, mate.
Oh, Jude. Judy.
Hey, Jude.
I am buzzing for him, but I'm also very bitter that Real Madrid priced Liverpool out because we need that boy.
Yeah.
But then, would he really want to come and join us in the Europa League?
Probably not, mate. No, bad. I think if Liverpool got the Champions League, it might have been a different conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see with Kane.
Bayern Munich is the only other option, but again, does he want to leave England?
Or if he goes, because Madrid still needs a striker.
Yeah, but yeah.
Well, I don't know.
I just can't imagine they have the funds after they've spent on Bellingham.
Yeah, but they're one of those
Mbappe.
Teams, aren't they?
But they've had to rein it in. Over the last 5 or 6 years, they have had to rein in. Like, they had 2 years without any big name signings because they were saving for Mbappe originally. And then Mbappe mugged them off only for a year later to turn around and go, actually, yeah, I am still available.
But they're not going to be able to afford Mbappe as well as Bellingham, surely.
I think it's one of those, like you say, for want of a nicking a phrase while we're talking about Barcelona, I think they'll pull whatever levers they need to do in order to secure their player. Or they'll play the waiting game and go, yeah, we'll take him in a year for free, thanks. So it's, you know, it's not like Real Madrid have to. It's not like he's an aging player where you're trying to get the most out of him. Mbappe's got his whole career ahead of him. Yeah. If I was Real Madrid, you just get a pre-contract signed and say, we'll give you, like...
It's going to be really interesting to see how it breaks. I know we've come completely away from the Europa League.
Yeah.
Maybe we can fit it in around the end of the Women's World Cup stuff. But we should do a final countdown to the start of the season.
Oh, that's good.
With all the transfers in place.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like, obviously you've got Declan Rice might go as well. Like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of moving.
Yeah, moving parts.
It makes the Premier League look completely different after the big transfer. January's not the same, is it? The summer?
No, it isn't. And there's a lot of changes happening with big players like Gundogan, who obviously has been a hero, treble-winning captain for Man City, is out of contract and still hasn't decided what he's doing.
Right.
Talk about Bernardo Silva going. Obviously, Liverpool are doing a kind of a rebuild.
Yeah,
like you say, people like Villa are going about their business cleverly. So it could be a really interesting way to look forward from the final.
Well, you heard it here first. That's something to look forward to.
There you go. Live programming straight on air. But talking about Gundogan, let's move on to Man City.
Oh, good link. Segway.
Well, what do you say about this treble-winning side? Just absolutely incredible stuff.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I get it a lot online, like reading the stuff. I want to give enormous credit because they're playing brilliant, brilliant football. But there is a shadow.
Yeah.
There is a shadow. And it doesn't stop the fact that football is being played brilliantly. Like, there are, you know, however it happened, that collective team with that manager have, you know, performed in a way that I don't think I've ever seen.
Yeah. Remarkable heights.
But... have they broken rules to get to it?
Yeah.
It's really difficult because you feel like, well, that's not the player's fault. It's probably not Pep's fault.
No.
But they're going to be the fool guys if it comes out.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy.
I can't remember who it was, but somebody was like, oh, they can't take that away from them, the treble. And then I thought, oh, you might be able to. There might be a way.
Yeah, which is weird, isn't
it?
Like, I mean, not just the treble. It will never be the same because all those teams won't get their celebration, they won't get their moments, all the rest of it. So, it'll, you know...
Yeah, if Liverpool get handed two titles...
It won't mean anything. No. It will just be really... it makes me think that the decision will probably go in favour of Man City, because I think the...
There's nothing really to be gained, is there?
It'll just rip right through football.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's a benefit to that. So I don't know. I don't know how these decisions get made. I probably think it'll be dodgy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that aside, because we've covered that, and I don't want to continue to add the asterisks.
Yeah, sure.
Because that's not fair on the players or the manager, who really this is about. I thought they're brilliant. I thought they... And I don't love Man City, but I do love Pep, and I do love Jack Grealish.
Jackie Grealish.
It's funny, isn't it, how, like, I don't know, 10 years ago, I didn't like City at all.
Yeah.
And then one or two personnel changes, and you're like, oh,
gives you a load of
I don't
affection.
Mind them.
Yeah.
It's really weird. Like, I was saying to someone yesterday, if Declan Rice joins Arsenal, I'd like Arsenal more than I do.
Yeah, sure.
It's
yeah.
so random.
I had that. It was really confusing time for me as a Liverpool fan a few years ago, well, quite a few years ago now, when Man United signed Shinji Kagawa, and then they had Henrik Mkhitaryan, and they just kept on signing all these players that I really love, and I found myself being like, United are building a really good squad. And I was like, what am I doing? Yeah. What am I doing?
Totally.
Have a word with yourself. I can't be liking Man United. Now they've had Jadon Sancho and completely ruined him, but I loved Sancho so much.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about England as well. When you're a big England fan, it does affect, like, you know, Rashford being brilliant.
Yeah, you can sub Ed Maguire. Yeah. Kind of like,
you
go
can't
on.
Help but go on, boys. Go on. Oh, hang on.
It's United. This is United.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's so strange.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
But no, I agree. Kind of, we don't need to keep on going over what we think about City and state owned clubs and all that kind of stuff. But also, credit Inter Milan. Everyone before, or 90% of people beforehand, were talking about how Inter are probably going to get unpicked, and this could be 2-0, 3-0, 4-0. And actually, they gave a great showing of it, and me and you refreshed our memory of the final, which we watched live, but we also went through and had a look. Edison pulls out some great saves that really do keep...
Towards the end, I mean, I think there's an element of even those players, they were aware of the City players, they were aware of the occasion. And I think you could feel the nerves a little bit in the last few minutes. It was largely in the last few
minutes. Yeah, it was, yeah.
There was a save earlier on where the defender runs away from the ball.
Yeah, Manuel Akanji just completely
misjudged. That's quite early on. But like the header, who's the dyed blonde guy that misses the header twice?
It hits
Lukaku.
Inter Milan. Oh, yeah. It's DeMarco.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Federico so his, DeMarco. I think that's like 80th minute-ish. Yeah. And that's a bad miss. Both those are bad misses. And then Lukaku's is a good save,
really,
Edison.
Feel for him. But
if you had said to Edison, try and get out of the way of Lukaku's header, I don't think he could have.
No, that was literally what I was about to say. Is it hits his standing foot, the one he's rooted his weight on.
Yeah.
So he doesn't, like, you're right in as much as a good save by Edison, because he's just standing in.
He's still got to be there.
His instinct on where he stood, and he's just reacting. But 3 inches to the left, 3 inches to the right, 3 inches up, anywhere else. And that game is going to extra time.
Yeah.
And you do feel for Lukaku, because he gets a lot, especially in the English press, because of his, you know, dodgy first touch and maybe not succeeding United particularly.
Yeah.
He just gets a little bit of kind of a choke attack, but
you
do feel like on the biggest stage possible, chance to kind of exercise those demons, and he's just fluffed his lines.
Yeah, I mean, his header is a poor header, isn't it?
A striker 2 yards out.
You got to bury that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you really do. I mean, Jarrod Bowen would have.
Maybe that's what's going to happen next season. Man City, he's going to let go of Bernardo Silva. He's going to let go of Gundogan. He's going to go, I've got the man to replace him.
Maybe. So, you're right. Edison, I think. I mean, I didn't think they'd do what they did to Madrid, to Milan.
Yeah.
I know there was I think people wanted to see a demolition.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like it was going to be that kind of game.
No.
Pep, the only thing I would say about Pep that's remotely negative is that it does feel like he tends to overthink these big games.
Yeah.
Almost like there's too much build up.
Well, I think he is conscious of his legacy. I think he does want to be known as the greatest manager in the world. I think he wants to be in the same thing.
And what
thing
keeps driving him if it isn't that?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that there being like a, what was it, 11-year, 12-year gap between Champions League titles, when so early on in his career he's already got two, and he's probably thinking, I could smash this out of the park. Like, Ancelotti's got four, hasn't he? He's the record holder for the amount of Champions League.
Okay.
So Pep's now got three, and I definitely think he's chasing that. So I think he gets nervous about his, less so even than like the club or just wanting to win for the fans. I think he is like, this is my legacy,
yeah,
and I have to I have to secure it by any means necessary. And that's what makes him overthink. That's what makes him nervous.
It seems that way. I mean, he was a little bit hindered. Obviously, De Bruyne going off was a huge thing. Foden's a great player, but he's not De Bruyne.
No, and in the second Champions League final as well, that De Bruyne's been injured. That's so cruel, isn't it?
So that was harsh. And obviously, that changes the makeup of the team. But I wouldn't say City were flowing before that.
No.
Milan either did a good job of shutting them down, or City just didn't. They just didn't seem as fluent as they.
No, they didn't have that cutting edge. They had the earlier chance, very early on, when Haaland is kind of finds his way into the penalty box, hits it straight at Onana.
Yeah.
But other than that, there's not many clear cut opportunities. Bernardo Silva just goes past the post after cutting inside. Yeah. But other than that, there's not really many clear cut opportunities.
No, totally. And I was watching it. It wasn't a great spectacle.
No, it wasn't.
It ended well. The goal was good.
Yeah.
City looking to work it to the right-hand side this time. Here's Bernardo Silva. Could he be the man? Not to be. Rodri! At last, City in dreamland.
And there was a chance, we just watched it, Foden.
Oh, Foden's that turn.
Which he actually should have scored. The turn is unbelievably
fast. If only it was Jared Bowen. Do you know what I mean? Just running one-on-one. Defenders bring Daniel.
I'm like, Phil, outside the left, top corner, mate. What are you doing?
Outside the left, I love that.
Like, what are you doing? Just trying to place it.
Just add a bit of spice to that. Outside the left.
So
I do agree with you. Foden, just bury it. You've come on, get your name in headlines.
I don't want to take anything away. It was a brilliant turn.
Yes. Yeah,
that's outrageous turn in that kind of arena to make a player, a world-class defender, look so stupid.
Yeah.
That would have put the game away.
Yeah, it would have done. And then I think we wouldn't get the mad scramble in the last 10 minutes because I think Inter would have known the nail in the coffin then.
Yeah, definitely.
Because there's only a goal margin in it, they keep on going. It does make me think with Foden, who obviously has kind of been on a bit of a journey this year where he started playing a lot of games for City, and then whether rumours are to be believed or not, but maybe his attitude suffered slightly as part of things. I think there was a small injury as well. And he's only over the last kind of five or six games started to come back into the team.
It's also the emergence of Grealish.
That's right, the
season before, Grealish was very much the Foden.
Yeah, yeah.
But he has become a different player under Pep.
But it makes me think, like, what is Southgate going to do? Because now we've got, it's so interesting looking to our next tournaments, or our next internationals. I know we've obviously got a couple of qualifiers taking place shortly, but we won't see much experimentation. We'll just win those games. But moving forward, our next like block of games, because you've got Alexander-Arnold, who is really coming inside now as these inverted
wing-backs.
They think
he's going to play midfield, don't they?
Yeah, season, so yeah. Like, is he going to be an out-and-out midfielder? Is it going to be a big tactical tweak, which is what Klopp's done over the last 10 games? Then we've got John Stones doing whatever he wants. It's great, playing as a six, playing as an eight, playing almost like a 10.
I feel like he's the player Sol Campbell wanted to be.
Big Sol, just want to do a never-ending slide tackle all the way up into striker.
He's got
to
run, Sol. Got to run, Sol. Sol, get back.
Sol, what are you doing? Sol, come back. But yeah, like, Stones has been absolutely reinvented and is in the best form of his career, but not as a centre-back, really.
No.
So that's going to be interesting for Southgate. You've got Foden, you've got Grealish, you've got Saka, Kane. Like,
it's crazy.
It really isn't. Bellingham's obviously potentially going to go to New
Heights.
It's
in great shape, isn't it? Because you think, well, it's got to be then Bellingham, and probably if Alexander-Arnold works, which I think it will.
But Southgate doesn't seem to rate him. So I think it'll be Rice still. I think.
Yeah, but if he smashes it for Liverpool. Oh, yeah, how can you drop Rice?
That's what I mean. Like, obviously, Henderson is aging out now. Henderson won't be the mainstay in the England squad. So it's basically Bellingham, Rice, plus one other. So is that going to be Foden? Is that going to be Mason Mount? Is that going to be Trent Alexander-Arnold? Is it going to be John Stones, potentially?
It's a great position to be in, isn't it?
It is, but I love Southgate. I do rate Southgate, but tactically, I don't think he's as advanced as other managers.
No.
So is he just going to stick to type then and go, I play, 4-3-3 or a 5-3-2 or whatever, and... Like, is he going to... We're going to see that age-old thing of, like, Alexander-Arnold is doing it at club level, but can't do it international. But it's like, same with John Stones. Is he just going to continue to play John Stones as an out-and-out, just normal centre-back?
Play three at the back, play John Stones on his own.
Yeah, just Stones up top. Just does it.
You'd be right, mate.
Yeah, free roll. Basically, what's been given to Messi... Yeah, what's been given to Messi over the years. Stones, I want you to go out on the pitch. Just express yourself. Wherever the pockets of space are, just find yourself there.
Yeah.
He's been remarkable.
He has, yeah.
Final question to end it on.
Yes.
Man United, Man City, two treble-winning teams.
Oh, this, yeah.
Either which is the better, or which treble did you like more?
If I'm really honest, I prefer the United one because of the English contingent.
Yeah.
It felt... And the kids, like, they were so young. that, you know, the Beckham Scholes and the Nevilles and all the rest of it. So back then, I wouldn't necessarily feel that way now, but back then it just felt like they'd achieved the impossible.
Yeah.
Beckham into Sheringham and Solskjaer has won it!
Whereas with City, it kind of felt like they did what they should have.
Yeah, well, they achieved the inevitable. You always knew at some point they were going to win the Champions League. It was just a matter of when rather than if.
But that's not, and there's a lot of talk in there comparing, that's not to belittle City's achievement. It's incredible. Both, you know, to win all three major competitions is insane. But yeah, I think the romance around the United one was probably bigger for me.
Yeah, that's the key word for me. I was about to say, I think City are the better team. I do think City are by far the better team. But the romance of... And also the fact they were so like below par in that final. They didn't deserve to win, really. No. Like, Bayern were by far the better team.
Yeah.
But the romance of it, like you said, right at the start of this podcast, which is where we'll finish up, because I love it when things come full circle. But they won it in English way. That late, yes, waiting until the last second.
Yeah.
That underdog story, which is weird to talk about Man United as underdogs, but they were.
Yeah.
And to come back and win it in the death
was
just something magnificent about that, even as a Liverpool fan.
And they made Germans cry.
Exactly. And what better note to end on than making Germans cry? So thanks for being with us, ladies and gents. We'll be back next week with our Women's World Cup final countdowns that we will be starting. But we wanted to just reflect back on the European titles that had happened to us over the last few days, now that we're back from our holidays and back in the swing of things. So thanks very much, everyone. And we look forward to hosting you next week.